From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, which recognizes the importance of Alaska's sustainable fisheries to the state's economy.
Peter Pan Seafoods shook up the fishing world last week when it announced its base price for this summer's Bristol Bay sockeye season. It's the first time in over two decades that a processor has told its fishermen what they would make before the season starts. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports on the fleet's enthusiastic reception and the reasons behind the company's unusual move.
Fishermen gathered at the PAF boatyard in Dillingham on Saturday evening. Peter Pan Seafoods had invited them there for a surprise announcement. Travis Roenfance, the company's Bristol Bay manager, gets up on a small wooden stage to speak.
So tonight, to exceed those expectations and show you how dedicated they are to creating new things and moving in a new direction, I'm going to announce our 2021 Bristol Bay sockeye salmon base price. We will be paying $1.10 this year. And hey,
one man walked to the stage to shake his hand.
Serious. Thank you.
That's $1.10 for every pound of sockeye caught in Bristol Bay. It's the first time in at least 25 years that a Bristol Bay processor has announced its base price this early in the year, Roenfance says. The move has to do with Peter Pan's new ownership.
Peter Pan is a new company this year, and they're really remodeling how they're thinking about things, more vertically integrated, and trying to get a better quality product to the market.
Fishermen in the crowd cheered the announcement. The base price is significantly higher than last year's price of 70 cents, but it's still lower than the 2019 price of $1.35. Even so, the fact that fishermen know that price now, in June, before they get out on the water, is a big deal. Fisherman Andy Peitsch says knowing what he'll earn takes away a lot of stress.
It's way better. Everyone has a better attitude. Deckhands can kind of do the math in their heads. Skippers can do the math in their heads about what you're catching, about what you're going to make.
Peitsch has fished in the bay for 37 years. He thinks the announcement will put pressure on other processors to follow suit. Peter Pan has also told fishermen the bonuses it will pay this year for icing, chilling, and bleeding salmon. And it plans to have a production bonus this fall. In an interview after the announcement, Roenfance said that setting the base price early also allows the company to better plan for the season.
We know where the base is going to be set now. We can look at the market and what we have coming up for our fresh markets and our frozen markets, and it gives us a good base starting point.
Another fisherman in the weekend crowd, Pete Cannon, said while he's excited about this year's base price, he still thinks it could be higher.
Well, the price in the market, it hasn't gone down at all for the consumer, so I think they could be a little more generous than that. But $1.10, then we have refrigeration prices on top of that and other incentives. So I do believe that it's a step in the right direction. That's for darn sure.
At the beginning of the year, Japanese seafood company Maruha Nichiro sold Peter Pan to three buyers, including the Anchorage-based investment firm McKinley Capital Management. Since then, the owners have been aggressively promoting their new vision for the company. The deal vertically integrated Peter Pan. Now, all stages of production and marketing, often operated separately, are under one owner. Bristol Bay processors all usually pay the same base price for sockeye, though bonuses vary by company. Whether Peter Pan has set a precedent for other processors remains to be seen. No other company has set its base price yet. They usually wait until the end of the season. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, reliably delivering for Kodiak since 1964.
Salmon fishing is closed on the Yukon River. For the second year in a row, the King Run is so low that many subsistence families won't get to taste the fatty, prized fish. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports that fishermen say the tightening regulations are changing their diets and their culture.
Nick P. Ander Jr. wistfully describes a bygone time in the lower Yukon village of Marshall, when the kings ran in abundance and people had busy drying schedules and bellies full of salmon.
In the years past, when we were targeting king salmon for subsistence, the smokehouses were full. The sweet aroma of the smokehouses blanketed the village.
He says that's absent this year. It's not that there are no king salmon running in the Yukon, but the numbers are too low to meet the legal escapement goals. And state fishery managers say it's too early to tell how the chum run will be this summer. For these reasons, the state has closed subsistence salmon fishing on the Yukon River. During these closures, only 4-inch gill nets of 60 feet in length are allowed, nets designed to catch whitefish, not salmon. At a Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association meeting, a subsistence fisherman who introduced himself as Eric from St. Mary's described the vibe in his village.
Very sad to see empty fish camps. Like most villages, everybody's sitting at home wondering what to do and wondering if we're going to have fish for subsistence this year. Kind of scary for a lot of people.
And Stanley Peak in the coastal village of Nunam Ikwa concurred.
There are no fish hanging on the racks. I've been receiving numerous calls in regards to when are they going to have an opportunity to get out on the river to try to harvest some fish for consumption.
Subsistence fishermen like Nick P. Andrew Jr. say that without salmon, their diet has changed.
Here in Marshall, it's basically moose meat. It's basically what we buy at the store. It is affecting our diet. There's a large staple missing.
Andrew says this means his culture is changing too.
Our traditional way of life is affected. It's a cultural impact. It's an impact on our overall well-being, including our emotional well-being.
Plus, Andrew says supplementing his diet with meat from the village store is getting costly, and prices have gone up since the pandemic. For vegetables, Andrew usually eats from his garden. But this year, the weather has been so cold and rainy on the lower Yukon that his potatoes and turnips are stunted. He hopes the fall chum run will put salmon back on fish racks. During the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association meeting, one subsistence fisherman from Russian Mission said that while his dogs can live off whitefish year-round, people can't. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
If Alaska state leaders can't resolve an impasse over the budget, large swaths of state government will shut down in July. And as KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, that could include Alaska's lucrative summer salmon fisheries, which is causing concern across coastal communities.
Southeast Alaska's summer salmon troll fishery opens July 1st. That's the same day nearly 15,000 state workers could be out of work. Among those is Grant Hagerman, a state fisheries biologist managing the fishery from Sitka.
Honestly, we're planning not to be here unless we hear differently on July 1. And with that, that summer fishery does not commence.
Many of Alaska's fisheries are operated by emergency order. That means fisheries open and closed based on real-time data and biologists like Hagerman's professional judgment. But he's not part of the special class that will keep public safety officials like the Alaska State Troopers on the job.
You'd think that, you know, we would have had a message maybe from, you know, administration from wherever just saying that here are, you know, the exempt or partially exempt or, you know, whatever job classes that could remain open. But we didn't get anything like that. I think it's just pink slips across the board if they don't pass. So it's really scary, you know, not just for us losing our jobs, but, I mean, we manage a fishery with 1,000 permit holders in Southeast. So it affects a lot of people. So but I have faith that they'll get something agreed to.
Even at the top of the ladder, agency leaders say they don't have many answers. Rick Green, a special assistant to the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, says this is the closest his agency has come to actually shutting down.
We, as a state, are on uncharted ground because I think last time the closest it ever got was it resolved like 9 days before or 8 days before. So we're closer than we've ever been before.
Green says the department is operating with the hope that the budget discussion will be resolved before that deadline.
It's a big question, but it's one that we're not addressing, and we're hoping with best intent that this comes to a resolve and we don't have to change anything.
This lack of clarity is stressful for everyone in the industry, says Amy Daugherty, executive director of the Alaska Trollers Association.
Many of our guys head out of town in preparation for the July 1st opening a few days in advance, obviously. And we're coming right up on that within the next few days. So, you know, this is incredible that we're going to be so directly impacted by these huge decisions, which, you know, are way over our head.
Ketchikan Representative Dan Ortez, an independent, says he and most of his legislative peers understand the gravity of the situation.
Any kind of commercial fishing where it requires management, on-site management of the department, is in jeopardy.
The main sticking point, he says, was a procedural vote in which four Republican House members refused to set the effective date of the budget to July 1st. It's part of a larger battle over the size of the permanent fund dividend checks for Alaskans.
And so therefore, we are where we are. We all are aware that, you know, if we don't get that thing done, or if we can convince the governor that he doesn't have to have it done in order for him to enact the budget, either of those two things would prevent a government shutdown.
The economic impact of shutting down Alaska's lucrative commercial salmon season would be huge, especially in places like Bristol Bay, which peaks in July. Dan Lesh, a Juneau-based fisheries consultant with McKinley Research, looked at the value of salmon landed over the past 5 years. He says that on average, about $316 million worth of salmon is typically taken in the month of July alone.
Over 50%, 52% over the last 5 years of the value of our overall salmon harvest for the year was in the month of July, and that's valued to the fishermen.
And even if state workers go back to work just a week or so late, the damage could be done. That's because most salmon species are heading towards rivers and streams. It's not possible for the fishing fleet to get a second chance for intercepting a lot of them.
The only species that might be able to make up harvest would be king salmon. The other fisheries are all timed to runs that are, as the fish are entering spawning habitat. They're not available for harvest later on in the summer.
The potential $316 million loss in payments to fishermen doesn't include the possible impacts to seafood processors and other shoreside support for Alaska's commercial fleet. With additional reporting by KDLG's Izzy Ross in Dillingham and Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick in Juneau, I'm Sage Smiley in Wrangell.
Thanks very much, Izzy, Jacob, and Sage. And thanks to KYUK's Olivia Eberts.